Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast, linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we're fortunate to have Greg Brown, the administrator of Charlotte Angel Fund 1 and now Charlotte Angel Fund 2, as well as owner of Cardinal Finance, a fractional CFO firm here in town. Greg's back on the podcast. Many of you probably don't know this, but Greg was the first interview on the podcast, and I'm happy to report to him that many things have changed, including the quality of the audio. So some other things you might not know is that Greg recently closed Charlotte Angel Fund, Charlotte Angel Fund 1 for new investments. And as a result, I just thought it'd be a good time for us to get back together, talk about what happened with Fund 1, where it ended up. How is the Fund 2 raise coming along as far as new member growth? And in general, it's just been 16 months since we spoke. A lot has changed in terms of the startup community and the angel community here in Charlotte. And I thought it'd be fun to get his perspective. In today's podcast, we end up talking mostly about Fund 1 and Fund 2, what he's learned, how the investments are playing out so far, where the investments were made, and just spend some time on that part of the world. In our second podcast that'll air next week, we'll dig with Greg a little bit further into the entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Charlotte. So with that, Greg, thanks so much for joining us today.
Well, you're very welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And I'm in awe of the technological improvements that have been made in 16 months.
That's fine. So fair to say, we're recording today back at Packer Place. Dan and his team have done an excellent job. We are sitting here in front of two pretty new Blue Yeti microphones and a nice little podcasting studio down here. So if the sound quality is fantastic, it's a result of Dan. If the sound quality is not so good, it's because I don't know how to use the technology. So bear with us. So, Greg, let's talk a little bit about Fund Number 1 and where it ended up. How many members did Fund Number 1 roughly end up with, and how much capital did it end up deploying across companies?
Fund Number 1 ended up with 60 members. They contributed $1.6 million to the fund and did another $300,000 in what we call add-on investments, which means additional capital that they contributed to go towards specific portfolio companies. In total, we've deployed $1.6 million out of that $1.9, the $1.9 being the $1.6 in the fund and $300,000 of add-ons.
Okay.
So $1.6 has been invested in 14 companies.
Okay, fantastic. Do you know the makeup of the membership of Charlotte Angel Fund 1 as far as are they all bankers that work in the ivory towers? Are they all retired folks that are 80 and above? What's the general population of it?
Cross-section of sort of what you would expect in the accredited investor community in Charlotte. There are a fair number of people who carry a business card from one of the big financial services institutions here in Charlotte, or maybe from a professional services firm that caters to those institutions. So a law firm, a consulting firm, a CPA firm, probably aggregate all those, and that's maybe a third of the membership, I would guess. There are a handful of folks who they're entrepreneurs themselves. They built a company that is going to be a little more mature than the startups, right, that we're looking at to invest in. Those companies are mature to the point where they've either had a liquidity event or they're now just producing enough cash flow for the founder of that business to be able to redeploy some capital and making some startup investments. You've got a smattering of medical professionals, for example. They tend to be high income earners, few folks who maybe it's just family money as their source of the capital, et cetera, but kind of cross-section of what you'd expect in accredited investor Charlotte land.
Yeah. So on that note, just what makes a good angel fund member? So is it somebody that's started a company before? Is it somebody that has technical expertise in software applications? Is it somebody that can come to every single meeting and sit in on every due diligence? What is it?
Let me answer that by coming at it from this perspective.
No. I asked the question. Go back.
This is the politician move. That's a good question, but I want to tell you something else.
Okay.
So here's how I explain when I'm meeting someone who's expressing interest in Charlotte Angel Fund. Here's how I describe to them what I think is a good fit.
Right? Okay.
I think that Charlotte Angel Fund is a good fit for people who want to be engaged as a part of something. If they just want to be a passive investor, we'll accept them, but they can be a passive investor a lot of different places,
yep.
Right? You can be an LP in all sorts of different funds.
Mm-hmm.
The folks who get the most out of the experience are the people who they like coming to the meetings because they like being engaged with the other people that are a part of the group.
Yep.
They like seeing the companies themselves. They like thinking about these opportunities. They're not looking to just have their money passively managed by someone, right? They want to understand the companies. They perhaps like to participate in the due diligence committees. They like to, bring their thought and their expertise to the process. And honestly, if we didn't have those engaged members, the fund wouldn't work.
Correct.
Right? We need them participating in the due diligence committees. We need them active as a part of the decision-making process.
So obviously the fund works because you've closed it, which means you've made all the investments. How many investments did the 60 members for the fund as a whole, I guess? How many investments did it end up making?
14. We've invested in 14 portfolio companies. Those were the earliest. The first of those, I think, was in Q3 of 2014.
Okay.
And we just made the last one. So we've invested in, let's say, a 3.5-year period of time, roughly one investment per quarter in a company added to the portfolio.
Is that faster than you would have thought?
No, I would have guessed one per quarter. And that's a pace that feels comfortable to me. And yep. That's how I see Fund 2 playing out.
Okay. From a company perspective, what's the makeup? Were they all from Raleigh? Were they all from Atlanta? Were they all healthcare? Were they all technology, software as a service? What's the makeup underneath the fund?
Sure. From a geography point of view, 13 of those companies were headquartered in North Carolina at the time we made the investment.
Okay.
One has since relocated to Austin.
Okay.
But 13 were North Carolina based when we invested. The 14th is actually a company headquartered in Boston.
Okay.
We got connected to them. One of the founders is from Charlotte, knows one of our members. That's how there became to be a connection with Charlotte Angel Fund and how they found their way into one of our monthly meetings, for a pitch to the group.
Okay.
We don't have any geographic boundaries in terms of the companies that we'll look at, obviously deal flow tends to be from the Carolinas. From an industry perspective, of the 14, five are within the medical arena in some way. Two are medical device companies, two are diagnostics, and one is pharmaceutical formulation. We've got five that are fundamentally they're software companies, either B2B, B2C, but they're an online software application. You log in to a software platform to, experience the product or service. And there are four that don't fit into either of those two categories.
Okay.
They're not medical and they're not a software company. So a couple of examples would be, we invested in a company called Gorilla RF, which is a specialty semiconductor company. We invested in a company called Textile Delivery, which is a advanced textile manufacturing technology. But four in that category, neither software nor medical.
Okay. Have any of them IPO'd or gone out of business? Or kind of where are they in their process?
We've had no definitive outcomes, either positive or negative.
Okay.
So no exits, either, so no IPOs, no sale to an acquirer. And also, so also no negative events either that, you know, put the zero in terms of the ultimate outcome. So all the companies are remain in business. We continue to feel good about all of them, but we have no definitive endpoints for any as of yet.
What's your expectation on the fund as far as, so it's closed, you made your investments. The first one, as you said, was the end of 2014. Does this thing close to all of the companies return capital or go out of business by 2025? Is it 2030? And I know that's hard to say. I mean, Avid took 15 years, I think, before CAP was refunded. But you've got a little bit of a finger on the pulse now as far as what's going on with some of these companies, especially the older ones. What's the timeline expectation?
I would guess if you looked out, let's say 5 years from now, you probably have half or more of the companies that have had some form of definitive outcome, right? They've either just, you know, not been able to sustain themselves, some couple of them have probably sold for a nice gain, et cetera, and you'll have a handful left that are still going on. Now, those could be, those can be the most promising one. You brought up AvidXchange as an example that was a really nice investment for Charlotte Angel Partners, not Charlotte Angel Fund. That investment was made maybe sometime in the early 2000s.
Yeah, 1999, 2000, yeah. Somewhere around there.
And it took them 15 years to get liquidity. Now, it took them 50 years to get 50 times their money. So
yeah.
You're willing to wait 15 years for that.
Yeah.
So sometimes the most promising ones can actually take the longest to mature. Eventually, we'll have to make an administrative decision whether we formally keep the fund in place,
yep,
or kind of pro rata distribute the assets to the members.
Okay.
And that'll just be a decision we make, you know, at some point it'll be apparent that that's the right thing to do. There are, yep, two or three companies left in the portfolio. Keeping this fund structure in place administratively isn't worth the cost and the hassle of doing it. I would guess we get to that decision sometime 5 or more years from now.
Okay. So if that's the case, that takes us to 2023, which means the fund, from a logistical standpoint, is kind of a 10-year-ish fund,
mm-hmm,
which makes sense.
Yeah.
The fund has been criticized in the past as far as not making investments in Charlotte-based companies. Can you talk a little bit about the deal flow that the fund sees? Where have they come from? I know you keep the statistics on it. And then maybe what's the kind of the makeup? And I guess you highlighted a little bit of the makeup just based on the companies that we've invested in so far, or the Charlotte Angel Fund has invested in so far. Can you talk about location and types of companies from a deal flow perspective?
Sure. Let me start with location. The statistics I'm going to give you are from the last 3 years. So I compiled 2015 through 17, total of 103 companies that presented at,
okay,
one of our monthly meetings,
okay,
over that period of time. So reasonable sample size. 22% of those presenters have been companies located in the Charlotte metro area.
Okay.
46% are from North Carolina outside of Charlotte.
Okay.
So add those up, 68% are North Carolina-based companies, 32% from outside North Carolina.
Gotcha.
That's in the room pitching to the members at one of our monthly meetings. The next step in the process is getting to due diligence. For those who haven't been there or aren't familiar with the process, companies come and pitch, and ultimately the first question to the members is, are we interested enough in this opportunity to make it a good use of the company's time and ours to do due diligence, which means look further into it?
Yeah.
And so by geography, for example, 35% of the Charlotte-based companies that present to our group, we've moved into the due diligence process.
So a third of the Charlotte-based companies.
Right. Third from Charlotte, 32% of North Carolina-based non-Charlotte companies, so just a little bit less than Charlotte-based companies, and 25% of those not from North Carolina have moved into due diligence. Not a big difference in geography there.
Yep.
Where we have seen a difference is the number who get through the due diligence process. So I'll start with Charlotte. For 35% of the presenters get into due diligence, 9% of the presenters ultimately received investment.
Okay.
For non-Charlotte, North Carolina companies, 32% of the presenters got to due diligence and 15% received investment.
Okay.
So a higher success rate in the due diligence process. And just to round it out, from outside North Carolina, again, 25% get to due diligence, 3% ultimately receive funding.
Okay.
Let me share what I think that says.
Yeah.
What I think it says is that our members are predisposed to favor Charlotte-based companies, right? Of the different groups by geography, Charlotte-based companies have the highest chance of getting to due diligence, right? So we're, I think, exerting every effort to make sure that we've been thoughtful about this.
Yep.
Ultimately, though, I think our members have demonstrated that they're not applying any sort of more lenient standard to a Charlotte-based company than one from anywhere else. And when ultimately only 9% of the Charlotte-based company presenters are receiving capital versus 15% of those from outside of North Carolina. From outside of Charlotte. So we're taking the extra step to make sure that we take a thorough look at the Charlotte-based companies, but ultimately the members who are, they're voting with their pocketbooks,
yeah.
Right? And this is a make money exercise, not an economic development exercise,
yeah.
Right? And so they're judging the opportunities ultimately in terms of who they're willing to give money to, not driven by geography, but by where they think they can get the best return on their capital.
So something we'll touch base on as we move into part two, but since we're here, I want to think about it for a second. So you've closed fund one, and the statistics that you just gave there were for fund one. You've got fund two. Fund two has how many members now?
We have, at this very moment, we have 23 members and $700,000 of member capital.
Okay, so a third of the members and 40% of the capital that fund two had, or fund one had.
Right.
So things have changed in Charlotte a little bit from the startup ecosystem. Do you expect to see more Charlotte-based companies come through from a presentation and funding perspective now, knowing this thing starting basically late 2017 versus the previous fund starting in 2013, right? So there's a 5-year difference in the ecosystem. Are you seeing more founders these days from Charlotte?
I don't know if we're seeing a higher quantity. I feel as though we're seeing a higher quality. And that, obviously, that's very subjective.
Yeah.
Right? I think in terms of the presenters, historically, 2015 through 17, we had one Charlotte-based founder for every two anywhere else in North Carolina founders. I don't know that that mix is going to change a lot. Right? The reality of the current environment is there are more startups in the Triangle than there are in Charlotte.
Yep.
We're certainly trying to be broad in our view of investment opportunities. We get a lot of referrals from other investors, many of whom are Triangle-based, so they have seen these companies and they know them and they say, hey, Greg, you guys might want to take a look at company X, right? And those companies that they're familiar with and referring to us are typically going to be from outside of Charlotte, right? The ones from inside Charlotte, I've probably already got pretty good visibility,
yep,
as to what they're doing. So I don't know that the number of presenters and the mix of them are going to change by geography, but I would expect the success rate in terms of how many ultimately get and what percentage ultimately get investment.
Yep.
It would not surprise me at all. I would expect to see the percentage of Charlotte-based presenters who receive investment increase in Fund 2,
okay,
corresponding with my perception that there's an increase in quality in the Charlotte startup scene.
Yeah. So let's stay on that for a second. I don't think a lot when I say you're the administrator of Fund 1 and Fund 2, for people that don't come to the meeting and don't see what you put into it on a month-over-month basis, my guess would be they don't have a clue what being the administrator really is. Can you talk a little bit about what you do for the fund and how that helps drive the fund on a month-over-month and year-over-year basis?
Sure. Start with, I'm one of the investors in the fund. So I'm, like the others, I'm, you know, one of those 60 members in Charlotte Angel Fund 1, I'm one of them.
Okay.
The probably starts with deal flow, right? So I'm talking with or being familiar with a lot of different startups, either me approaching them or them approaching me to say, hey, I'd like to be able to be considered for investment from your group. Deal flow, screening of those, ultimately making a decision. Here are the three companies that I'm going to invite to present to this month's meeting. We tend to have three new opportunities presented each meeting. Then there's the organization, make a meeting itself happen.
Yeah.
Right? So have a, you know, thankfully Dan's willing to make the space here at Packer Place available. So we meet here, but just make that meeting happen. Get a video guy there to record the meeting, make sure there's food and beverage, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have the meeting. There's a decision about, you know, we come to a decision about who we're going to do due diligence on. Then there's organization of that process.
Yep.
Get some members to volunteer for that, provide a due diligence outline, make sure we receive materials from the company, conduct a due diligence meeting. So we'll have a 2.5 or 3 hour meeting with that particular company where we go through questions we have on our materials and ultimately try to obtain the information we think we need to write a due diligence report.
How much do you help in that due diligence meeting, right? I mean, you've got 3, 4, 5 folks in that meeting in addition to the founder. Somebody's targeted with asking questions about the management team and their experience or whatever it ends up being, and they miss something. Do you jump right in there, or how do you assist that team in making sure the right information is, lack of a better term, extracted from the founders?
One of the things that I'm aware of is that across our membership, there's, you know, there's a broad spectrum in terms of how many companies at this stage they've ever looked at. Have they ever engaged in any of this sort of activity? I view my role in the due diligence process as to try to make sure that we have a consistent approach company to company, that there shouldn't be a wildly different experience based upon who the particular volunteer members of that due diligence committee are versus the one for a company next month, just because they're different human beings.
Yeah.
So I try to participate in, but not dominate, the due diligence session. Let's say if I have questions or in a certain area that for some reason haven't come up,
mm-hmm.
when during the conversation, I'll certainly bring it up.
Okay.
Right? Like, you know, hey, I noticed such and such in your documents. Could you speak to that? I'm a little confused about the financial model. Could you go over that? One of the things I'm trying to do in that due diligence session is make sure that I have a clear understanding of what the situation is with this company, so that when the volunteer members of the due diligence committee write the report, that it's an accurate reflection.
Yeah.
So that when somebody submits their writing on the section about the team, mm-hmm. for example, that, yeah, that's what the situation is versus, oh, they missed something.
Yeah.
Right. So I have to be there, be in that due diligence session, know what was said to be able to review what was written and say, yeah, that's a complete and fair depiction of what the situation is with this company.
So is there anybody in the group that when they raise their hand to serve on the due diligence committee, you roll your eyes and say, oh gosh, not this guy?
I will say this, some are, you know, they all get homework as a part of the process. And some people are better about getting their homework done than others.
Yeah.
Right. Of course, William, you're at the top of the list.
Yeah,
in terms of, you know, the due diligence committee members who I value.
Yes.
But I'm aware of individual track records in terms of being timely with doing their work on the due diligence committee. When I think about, oh, how are we going to, you know, how are we going to put together this committee?
So do you help on the output as far as the due diligence report goes as well? Members submitted, but you massage it along the way or kind of coach them through the process?
Sure. I'll do some editing we may have four or five members who are contributing to that due diligence report, writing certain sections.
Yep.
I do some editing to make sure it reads like one document.
Yep.
Make sure the terminology is the same and all that sort of thing, so that when someone else reads it, there's logic to it,
yep.
Right? And it sort of flows, and all right, this all makes sense to me. And then ultimately, once the due diligence report is in draft form, I send it out to those due diligence committee members so they can each, that's the first time, their first opportunity to see one of those writing.
Yep.
And then I convene a meeting of that group to talk about it, you know, talk about their feelings now that they've, you know, they obviously come into it with their own. They've been able to read other people's perspective on different things, and then convene a meeting where we come up with what our recommendation to members is going to be. Do we think we should invest? Do we think we should not invest? Do we think we should only invest subject to some condition?
Yep.
Right? Only if they land that contract that they're talking about, or only if there's some change in the legal structure, whatever it may be.
Yep. So as we move to wrap up here in part one and then focus a little bit more on the entrepreneur system, part two, again, you've been doing Charlotte Angel Fund One now for basically 5 years. Two has been in place for a little over a year, I think. What do you want to see with Fund Two over the course of the next couple of years that would show improvement, or either from an investment perspective or from a founder perspective? What are you looking for differently out of Fund Two? Not necessarily better, but just shows that things are maturing here.
One of the metrics that I'm focused on is member add-on investments. I think one of the purposes of Charlotte Angel Fund, one of the good things that it can do for the community, is to activate the investor base. Right? We have, I don't know how many, 10,000 accredited investors in Charlotte. That would just be a guess,
yeah.
Right?
And I'm going to 10X that.
And maybe 200 of those people are in any way actively angel investing.
Yep.
And member add-on investments, you know, and again, that's where members of the fund want to deploy, but when the fund's investing, they deploy additional capital because they want to put more into this company, et cetera. So that's them increasing their level of activity and financial commitment to the space. For example, in Fund Two, one of the things that I'm happy about early, we haven't talked a lot about Fund Two specifically, but we've invested $175,000 so far out of the fund's capital
mm-hmm.
into five companies. There's been $250,000 of add-on investment
wow.
in those five opportunities. Now that compares with 300 and some thousand in total for the 14 companies in Fund One. So it's a, you know, the group as time goes on and the group gets more familiar with and adept at investing in this space, there's a higher comfort level with deploying capital in the space, feeling like, okay, I know what I'm doing. I know what kind of companies I like, I don't like. And we're seeing more members deploy more capital alongside the fund's capital.
Yep.
And I think that's a big deal.
That's
a sign of an active investor base.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you've almost called Fund One, and it's been around for, you know, a year, and you've got 40 less members. So, I mean, that's a huge improvement year over fund over fund, I guess, so to speak. So, well, it's cool. So, no, I mean, good first part. I mean, I enjoy hearing about the success of it. I think, to your point, it has an opportunity to activate not only investors, but founders and help grow the system, the ecosystem, so to speak. And that's one of the things that we'll talk about heading into podcast number two, just because you see so much on the ground from an investor and startup space. What's happened over the course of the last 5 years that gets you optimistic about Charlotte? So we'll wrap up there, and we'll come back in a few minutes. But thanks for sitting down for the first 30 minutes with us so far here, Greg.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments described herein may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interests may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, Paragraph 51, Line A, under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interests. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.